VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. A Syrian opposition war monitor said on Tuesday that Israel carried out a wave of heavy airstrikes across Syria as its troops advanced deeper into the country. The Israeli defense minister announced that his forces had destroyed Syria's navy. Israel acknowledged pushing into a buffer zone inside Syria following the overthrow of President Bashar al-Assad, but it remained unclear if its soldiers had gone beyond that area, which was established more than 50 years ago. Israel denied it is advancing on the Syrian capital of Damascus. Israeli officials have said they are striking military assets to prevent them from falling into the hands of extremists. The United States said Tuesday it would recognize and support a new Syrian government that renounces terrorism, destroys chemical weapon stocks, and protects the rights of minorities and women. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu took the witness stand Tuesday for the first time in his long-running trial on corruption charges. AP correspondent Tia Goldenberg reports from Tel Aviv.
Netanyahu is accused of fraud, breach of trust, and accepting bribes in three separate cases. He denies wrongdoing. In one of those cases, he's accused of accepting cigars and champagne from a billionaire Hollywood producer. In the others, he's accused of trading regulatory favors with media moguls in exchange for positive media coverage. During his testimony to a packed Tel Aviv courtroom, Netanyahu spoke at ease. He said he didn't even like champagne and that he hardly gets to finish a cigar because of his workload. A verdict in the trial isn't expected until 2026, and then Netanyahu can appeal to the Supreme Court.
AP correspondent Tia Goldenberg. This is VOA News. Pro-democracy and human rights groups say more than 100 people were killed in Sudan when 8 barrel bombs hit a market in North Darfur on Monday. Reuters correspondent Angela Johnston reports.
One activist said that while there are typically a few soldiers in the market in town, most of those present were civilians. And that some bodies were too charred or mutilated to identify. The army has frequently targeted towns in North Darfur with airstrikes as it fights the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, for control of the state capital. The army denied responsibility for the attack on the market, but insisted it had the right to target any location used by the RSF for military purposes. The conflict has been turning increasingly bloody as ceasefire efforts have stalled and crises elsewhere have dominated world attention. Both sides have targeted densely populated civilian areas in the 20-month-old war. The United Nations has said more than 30 million people are in need of aid, and some 12 million have fled their homes.
Reuters correspondent Angela Johnston. Prosecutors are suggesting various ways to keep U.S. President-elect Donald Trump's historic hush money conviction on the books. AP correspondent Norman Hall reports.
The proposals include freezing the case until Trump is out of office, or agreeing that any future sentence wouldn't include jail time. Another idea, closing the case with a notation that acknowledges his conviction, but says that he was never sentenced and that his appeal wasn't resolved because of presidential immunity. The last option is adopted from what some states do when a criminal defendant dies after being convicted, but before appeals are exhausted. Trump is pressing for the case to be thrown out. I'm Norman Hall.
The suspect in the killing of an American healthcare executive struggled with deputies and shouted while arriving for a court appearance on Tuesday, a day after he was arrested. AP correspondent Haya Bendwani reports.
The suspect in the killing of the United Healthcare CEO shooting shouted at reporters as he entered court in Pennsylvania.
We need to do it, and it's completely out of touch, and it's insult to the intelligence of the American people. It's a lived experience.
Deputies struggled with Luigi Nicholas Mangione and pushed him inside the courthouse for a brief hearing. Mangione's defense lawyer, Thomas Diggy, told the court that he wouldn't waive extradition to New York, but instead wanted a hearing on the issue. Mangione was arrested in Pennsylvania after a McDonald's customer recognized him and notified an employee. I'm Haya Panjwani.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, December 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zambia's Constitutional Court declares former President Lungu ineligible to run in the 2026 presidential election.
You can't bar someone in future elections. According to our laws, you can only raise an issue around them when they present their papers for nomination.
Meanwhile, the Zambian government says it has no role in the Constitutional Court's decision. The dispute in Liberia's divided House of Representatives over the speakership took a dramatic turn on Tuesday. The UN program empowers Africa's public workers to use online technology to improve government services. An ECOWAS official says the conduct of Ghana's December 7th election marks the beauty of democracy in the sub-region.
There are 15 countries in the region, you know, as we speak, 11 of them still go through the ballot box in order to choose their leaders. And for ECOWAS, this is what our prime objective is.
And Trump signals a hands-off Syria approach. Can he deliver? Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zambia's Constitutional Court has declared former President Edgar Lungu ineligible to run in the 2026 presidential elections. The court had ruled in 2021 that Lungu was ineligible to contest in the polls, although he lost to then opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema. In its ruling on Monday, the court admitted that its 2021 ruling was based on flawed legal interpretations and administrative legal oversights. The court had been hearing a petition about the eligibility of former President Lungu, who has accused the judiciary of being manipulated by political forces, according to the Lusaka Times. Emmanuel Mwamba is the spokesperson for Zambia's main opposition, Patriotic Front Party. He tells me that former President Lungu has instructed his lawyers to appeal the court's decision.
The Constitutional Court is a court of first and last instance. It doesn't revisit its decisions. But in this case, the Constitutional Court has decided to revisit the four decisions that were made in the past that made Edgar Lungu eligible to stand for elections. So if it can allow to review its own past decisions, it will be made again to change its decisions. We've expressed concern that the court has not attended to the issue of the Constitutional Court and the election, because if Edgar Lungu participated in an election that is being deemed that there was an illegal candidate in him, then that election must be nullified. So there's no way Edgar Lungu will be an illegal candidate who is not allowed to contest in the 2021 elections and the 2026 elections, and that election can be valid. I think it is a farce. We recognize that the Constitutional Court stated that they will not handle the matter of Edgar Lungu's eligibility in the 2021 elections. They think that that was okay, but that Edgar Lungu is being barred in future elections. That is illegal in itself. You can't bar someone in future elections. According to our laws, you can only raise an issue around them when they present their papers for nominations.
Let's go back to the 2021 elections. I think the court is now saying that there were some errors in the judgment that allowed President Lungu to contest the 2021 election. Do you accept that?
No, we don't. The court has ruled on this matter four times. You can't provide erroneous judgments four times. The erroneous judgment is this judgment that they've just passed.
When you say that he has instructed his lawyers to appeal, you're going back to the Constitutional Court that just made the ruling?
Yes, the Constitutional Court has made it very clear that it can review its own decisions, and it will be merged. It will be compelled to review these decisions because of the numerous errors that are contained in the decision that they've just made.
So the former president has posted on the social media in reaction to the court ruling. He's talking about something called Plan B. What exactly is he saying about this?
We may not be privy to what Plan B is, but he's right. political and civil rights to participate in the election are being taken away unfairly. His rights must be respected. The same constitutional court ruled that he was eligible to stand, and it didn't rule once, it ruled four times. What we see is politics at play, where the constitutional court is being used as a tool to exclude a political opponent.
Emmanuel Mwamba is the spokesperson for Zambia's main opposition, Patriotic Front Party. He was speaking with me from Lusaka. Meanwhile, the Zambian government says it has no role in the Constitutional Court's decision that declared former President Edgar Lungu ineligible to run in the 2026 presidential elections. The court had ruled in 2021 that Lungu was eligible to run for president, although he lost to then-opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema. Cornelius Mwitwa is Zambia's information minister. He tells me that the government and the ruling party are law-abiding, and that he encourages the former president to support the verdict.
For us as a party, as a UPND, we pretty just welcome and respect the decision of the court, just like we have done before when the court has made a ruling that did not go in the way of our anticipation. So we are a law-abiding party, and regardless of outcome, we respect the law, because we know that the law is the pinnacle of the architecture of governance. And therefore, we want to encourage our colleagues as stakeholders to go in line with the verdict of the court. This, in our view, has given finality to a long-standing national question which has plagued and exercised national debate.
So you mentioned in 2021 that this issue should have been settled, but President Lungu was allowed to participate. Now he's claiming that there's political interference in the Constitutional Court's decision.
Politicians are politicians, and they are cut from different cloth. Sometimes when a politician loses their argument, politicians do not have a straight face to stand up to their supporters and stand up to the citizens and absorb what has been rendered before them. They would rather appear, you know, to move away from the discussion table with valid arguments, even when their arguments have been thoroughly nullified. As you have seen in the judgment today, the court went to length, citing local and international legal jurisprudence and precedents to ensure that no stone was left unturned. I would like to indicate that after the judgment, we as government, through my ministry, did a press briefing which to indicate very, very clearly and in no uncertain terms that for us, this has nothing to do with an individual. This has to do with settling the law going forward so that the law is certain and predictable, because it is important to have a predictable and settled law in terms of political, economic, and national security, stability, and sustainability.
Cornelius Mwitwa is the Zambia Information Minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. An official of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, has described the conduct of the December 7th elections in Ghana as the beauty of democracy. Abdel Fattah Moussa is the ECOWAS Commissioner for Political Affairs and Security. He tells me that the recent election in Ghana, Liberia, and Senegal are proof that the people of the sub-region prefer democracy over military rule.
From the point of view of ECOWAS, these elections have been excellent. You know, James, our region is now engaged in some kind of a competition between those who want to discredit the democratic choice of the region and then moving towards military intervention and other things. On the other hand, we've got exemplary electoral processes all across West Africa, which means that democracy is still very much alive, and whatever difficulty the teething democratic culture is throwing up, people want to stick with it. There are 15 countries in the region, you know, as we speak, 11 of them still go through the ballot box in order to choose their leaders. And for ECOWAS, this is what our prime objective is. That is number one. Number two, with regard to elections in Ghana, it couldn't have been more beautiful than what we saw. At the time that the candidate of the ruling party conceded defeat, only about under 40 constituencies out of about 276 constituencies had been declared. And the vice president of Ghana, Mahamudu Bawumia, came out and said he concedes the election because from their own tabulation, there is no pathway to victory for them. And congratulated his opponent, you know, John Dramani Mahama of the National Democratic Congress. This is the beauty of democracy. We saw that also being done in a place like Liberia when George Weah, before everything was over, congratulated the winner. We saw in Senegal in the two elections that have taken place, that also happened. So from our point of view, this is brilliant. We are not saying that the electoral process was perfect. There were a couple of fatalities during the elections, and these are things that we have to work after the elections with the authorities to try and make sure that those incidents are not repeated in future elections. That is the role of ECOWAS, not only observing, but also engaging in serious preventive diplomacy.
Abdel Fattah Musa is the Commissioner for Political Affairs and Security of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS. He was speaking with me from Ghana's capital, Accra. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Wednesday, December 11th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The dispute in Liberia's divided House of Representatives over the speakership took a dramatic turn on Tuesday. President Joseph Boakai invited Embattled Speaker J. Fonati Kofa to a meeting and asked him to resign as Speaker. The President told the Justice Minister to recognize the majority bloc and their new Speaker, Richard Kuhn. The Liberia Front Page Africa publication reports that the Senate also recognized Kuhn as the new Speaker. Representative J. Marvin Cole is the chair of the Committee on Rules, Order, and Administration and a member of the minority bloc that supports the embattled Speaker Kofa. He tells me that Kofa is still the Speaker in line with the Constitution.
Last evening, the President of the Republic of Liberia, His Excellency Joseph Yuma Mbwaka Sr., they sent Speaker Kofa an invite. He went there to have a conversation with him, and he told Speaker Kofa upfront that he was requesting him to step aside. And the Speaker felt that he was trying to rubber stamp the national legislature. He was trying to turn the country into a one-party state, and he decided to disengage from that conversation. Speaker Kofa is doing everything to uphold the rule of law.
As things stand right now, Speaker Kofa, does he still believe that he is the Speaker of the House of Representatives?
Speaker Kofa is still the Speaker. Constitutionally, he is the Speaker of the House of Representatives. One thing that we want to establish for the world to understand, for the President, His Excellency Joseph Yuma Boakai, to send an invite to the Speaker to ask him to resign, it does one major thing. That is, he recognizes that Fonati Kofa is still the Speaker of the 55th Legislature.
But now we know that out of that meeting, President Boakai or the executive branch has recognized Mr. Richard Kuhn. Is that true?
Well, what happened is the President had decided to violate the Constitution of the Republic of Liberia by his actions and inaction by going against the ruling of the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court was very clear that any action, any sitting that is not in conformity with Article 33 and Article 49 of the Constitution, and those two articles are very clear that any sitting, whether majority, whether minority, those sittings must be presided over as required by the Constitution of Liberia. Article 49, it states that every 6 years we will elect one of our colleagues, and that person will be the Speaker, and that person shall serve as the presiding officer. If you have any sitting without the presiding officer, who is the Speaker, J. Fonati Kofa, in the Bill of Rights of the Republic of Liberia, that sitting is ultra vires. it means it's unconstitutional, it's illegal.
What can you tell us, Representative Cole, that President Boakai has also ordered the withdrawal of the security details of Speaker Kofa? Is that true?
Yes, he started giving those instructions. He started preventing the Speaker of his immunities, his privileges, his rights as a citizen, as Speaker of the 55th Legislature. And that's what I'm telling you, for the President who has spoken about the rule of law, and now I see him completely doing something far away from the rule of law. I know that you are aware from the 14 civil crisis in our country that took away over 300,000 lives. And I think no president, no government should engage in anything that will carry Liberia to the dark path. So it is to speak to our international partners to encourage them that they have to watch this government keenly, and a statement from our international partner to ensure that the rule of law within the Bailiwick for Liberia are held to. I think it will help the Republic of Liberia. Mind you, any crisis here, it will be foreign nations that will come to help us.
What happens next now for Speaker Kofa?
Right now, he's kind, he's steady, he's very, very good. I mean, he's organized in terms of his mental capacity. So Kofa is doing a lot of consultations, and after those consultations, he will make the necessary statement to the world.
Representative J. Marvin Cole is the chair of the Committee on Rules, Order, and Administration and a member of the minority bloc that supports Speaker J. Fonati Kofa. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Justice Minister Oswald Twe did not return our call, but local media reported Tuesday that the minister said that the majority bloc of the House of Representatives has the constitutional authority to conduct business on behalf of the House. The United Nations, Microsoft, and Kenya's Ministry of Information have launched a digital and artificial intelligence center in Nairobi to train African public servants and accelerate the development and use of online services. The goal is to support the Africa tech sector and deliver services to citizens with greater efficiency. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
Last week, the UN Development Programme, UNDP, launched the Timbuktu Green Tech Hub and Africa Centre for Competence for AI and Digital Skills in Kenya. Officials say the digital transformation programmes at the hub aim to improve the skills of 100,000 government workers to drive governance, innovation and sustainable development in Africa. Speaking at the launch, UNDP's regional director, Ahuna Azeakonwa, said better digital skills and resources will enable Africa to achieve technological progress.
An inclusive public sector digital transformation drives efficiency and effectiveness and helps governments to enhance coordination of resources and information and strengthens data-anchored policy-making and implementation.
Kenyan President William Ruto says more than 20,000 government services can be accessed online. He says the digital transformation has made government work easier.
This will help us streamline public service delivery, enhance transparency and efficiency, minimize opportunities for corruption, and maximize visibility and mobilization of public revenue. The transformative impact of this single initiative on citizens' experience in accessing public services, along with the government's capacity to effectively manage public resources, clearly illustrates the immense value of digital transformation.
Governance experts say digital services offered online have improved citizens' trust in public services and made the work of government workers faster, more accurate, and more transparent. However, the frequent power and internet blackouts that plague some African countries sometimes force government workers to resort to traditional paper and file systems. Some workers also have little experience with computers and feel that online glitches are slowing them down. Michael Niyitejeka is the team leader at Refactory, a software academy in Uganda that prepares youth for global tech work. He says authorities must push the workers to use the deployed technologies.
So leadership has to be extremely firm on knowing how they want to use these technologies and invest in ensuring that people are actually working with it. The second thing that we need to work on is the entire ecosystem. So the citizens must be brought to speed, the different users of these technologies as we are building need to be brought on board so that you're building together. Otherwise, it will probably become a white elephant, and we've seen quite a number of these projects.
Tech experts say if developed correctly, digital technology and artificial intelligence can transform communities in Africa. They say proper investment in education can help communities transform and spur technological and economic progress. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
At least 127 people, mostly civilians, were killed in Sudan on Monday and Tuesday by barrel bombs and shelling from the warring sides, according to Reuters, citing rights activists. The 20-month-old war between the army and the paramilitary rapid support forces, the RSF, has been turning increasingly bloody as ceasefire efforts have stalled and crises elsewhere have dominated world attention. The army has stepped up airstrikes in the half of the country that the RSF controls, while the RSF has staged raids on villages and intense artillery strikes. Both have targeted densely populated civilian areas. Donald Trump has signaled he wants to avoid involvement in Syria following an insurgent group's ouster of President Bashar al-Assad. However, as White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wadekuswara reports, the president-elect might need to balance his stance with the U.S. goals of protecting Israel, isolating Iran, and dealing with Russia, Turkey, and other actors.
Syrians are still celebrating the ouster of President Bashar al-Assad, who has fled to Moscow. But the country's future is far from clear as regional powers scramble to secure their interests. From the south, Israel launched strikes to weaken what's left of the Iranian allies' military. In the north, Turkish-backed rebels seized territory, causing Syrian Kurds to flee. U.S. President Joe Biden has moved quickly, launching airstrikes on Islamic State group targets in Syria.
The United States will work with our partners and the stakeholders in Syria to help them seize an opportunity to manage the risks.
By contrast, President-elect Donald Trump has signaled a more hands-off approach.
It certainly seems like the world is going a little crazy right now.
Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, the rebels who toppled Assad, is a U.S.-designated foreign terrorist group. Still, Trump wants the U.S. to stay out of the Syrian conflict. This is not our fight, he said on social media. Tulsi Gabbard, Trump's pick for intelligence chief, agreed.
He is fully committed, as he has said over and over, to bringing about an end to wars, demonstrating peace through strength, and putting the national security interests and the safety, security, and freedom of the American people first and foremost.
But with Assad gone, Trump may need to balance his non-interventionist stance with U.S. goals of protecting allies such as Israel and Jordan and avoiding the resurgence of terrorist groups such as Islamic State. Christopher O'Leary focuses on counterterrorism at the Soufan Group via Skype.
Reducing the access to chemical weapons, reducing the capabilities of known terrorist organizations in ungoverned space or in space where there's failed states, where nobody else can do it, I think is a very smart move. And I do think that is likely what President Trump will continue to do.
During his first term, Trump ordered strikes on the Assad regime in response to chemical weapons attacks, but focused more on defeating Islamic State. He ordered U.S. troops out of Syria in 2019, leaving a few hundred American soldiers to protect oil fields. He was criticized for abandoning allies. Following the withdrawal, Turkey launched offensives against Kurdish forces who had fought alongside American soldiers to destroy Islamic State in Syria. This time, Trump said, quote, "Let it play out. Do not get involved." But with so many U.S. interests in the region, that may be easier said than done. Patsy Wadekuswara, VOA News, Washington.
And that's it for this Wednesday, December 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming on board with us this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butte in Washington, saying have a lovely day. We'll be right back.